I said it, Luke took it, and we're all good.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be looking back at Sunday's action. We're going to be previewing Monday's games as well as having a look ahead at week 4 in the NBA. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start with
Monstrous line of the night.
Yes, it is the monstrous line of the night, and it goes to Kyle Lowry of the Toronto Raptors, who was unbelievable in a huge win for the Raptors. It got a little bit closer than anticipated later on in the game, but Lowry broke this game wide open to begin with. 21 points with 6 rebounds, 15 assists, 3 threes, 2 steals, and a block. He took 19 field goal attempts, hit 8 of them. And his start to the season has been red hot. The 11th ranked player so far out of the gate, absolutely firing. Now, there's going to be a level of regression here. Maybe it's not the assists, because they are absolutely flying, 11.6 per game, up from 7 the year before, 7 the year before, 6.5 the year before that. A lot of that playmaking, and that, I think, can be attributed to what Nick Nurse is doing with this offense. The removal of DeMar DeRozan, Kawhi Leonard is not as much of a playmaker as what DeRozan had become in his last few seasons. So perhaps the assists can stick. One thing I think won't stick is the field goal percentage. 59% on his two-pointers. He was at 47 last year, 52 the year before, 46 the year before. So I think best case we can expect low 50s, not high 50s, pushing 60%. He's also hitting 41% of threes, which is fine. That's about what Kyle Lowry does. So I think that level can stick, but it's going to drop his overall field goal percentage down, which is currently sitting at 49.6. Those numbers will start to come down as the season goes on, and he'll regress back to being that back-end second-round guy instead of the end-of-the-first-round sort of a player that he is. But if you drafted him, which you could have got him in the third round in a lot of places, and I think fair enough, you've been really happy with the way he started his season. But just be aware, there are some levels of regression there, mainly in that two-point percentage and his overall field goal percentage. But it is possible that the assist numbers come down, although I do think that they will stick where they currently are.
Waiver wire line of the night
goes to Shelvin Mack of the Memphis Grizzlies. Mack was great, and I can't say anything more than that. Really, 28 minutes for Shelv, 21 points, 2 triples, 1 assist, 1 rebound, 4 assists, and 4 steals on 7 of 10 shooting. Mack is playing a significantly larger amount of minutes than I expected from him this season. I thought maybe he wouldn't even get the starting gig. Sorry, not the starting gig, the backup gig with Javon Carter around Andy Harrison. But JB Bickerstaff has gone straight to Mack, and he is a top 130 player this season, playing 30, 33, and 28 minutes in each of the last 3 games, scoring in double digits in all 3 of those, and tallying 15 assists across those 3 games with 5 steals. Now, he is shooting unsustainably high. In 6 of the 8 games, he has shot at least 57% from the field. This is not a guy with a record of being a great shooter. 43 last year, 45 the year before that, 44 the year before that. So there's going to be a significant regression. He's hitting 56% of his 3-pointers. And when that starts to go down, I'm not sure Bickerstaff is going to rely upon him to be a 28, 29 minute per game guy and play all these 2-point guard lineups with him and Mike Conley. Because if the shot's not going in, and if he's back to that level that he was as a player through that last season in Orlando, I'm not really sure that he's going to be able to maintain. In fact, I'm pretty bloody certain that he won't be able to maintain this current level. But for now, if you're feeling lucky, go and stream him, get some 3, 4, 5 assists in, maybe 12 points or so. But the upside, I believe, from Mack is relatively limited, and I don't think we should be getting overly excited at this level of production. But again, those assists, they can be valuable, but whether they stick for the season, all that playing time and that shooting percentage, whether that sticks for the season, I think that's probably the bigger question that you want to be asking with Shelvin Mack. The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on both Twitter and on Instagram. I've already told you guys, you should go check out Locked On NBA Net on Twitter, but that's also our Instagram handle as well. On Instagram, Locked On NBA Net, we're giving you the biggest stories in just 1 minute through Instagram stories. And then we're giving you longer cuts in our on those bigger stories in our regular Instagram feed. So follow both Locked On NBA Net on Instagram and on Twitter. On Twitter, you get the feeds from all hosts across all 30 podcasts, and it's a great way to get all the breaking news, rotation changes, information regarding injuries for all 30 teams, which, of course, can help significantly with your fantasy lineups. The deep leaguer of the night goes to, and this guy amazingly just rostered in 2% of Yahoo leagues, which feels really low. I feel like I've been talking about him for a while. Mikal Bridges of the Phoenix Suns, 26 minutes for Bridges. And I've been, you know, positing this since Summer League. How long until Bridges is recognized as a better player than Josh Jackson? It's happened. He is already a better player than Josh Jackson. Sorry. He already was a better player than Josh Jackson. Igor Kokoschkov has realized he is a better player than Josh Jackson, and he should remain in the rotation ahead of Jackson and playing significantly more minutes than Josh Jackson as we move forward. 14 points with 4 triples. Now, admittedly, 5 of 6 shooting is not going to keep up. 2 steals and a block, but importantly, he played almost the entirety of the second half, almost closed the game for the Phoenix Suns, and looked to be as part of that lineup with Devin Booker, with Trevor Ariza, and playing with DeAndre Ayton as well. We had Isaiah Kanan in there for a chunk of time as well, and then when TJ Warren's back, maybe we get him in, and maybe we get that lineup that I talked about in the preseason. Booker, Bridges, Ariza, Warren, and Ayton, with that, you know, Warren, Ariza 3-4 pairing. I thought they'd put Jackson in there, but Bridges has clearly overtaken him at this point. Now, rostered in 2% of leagues, you should be adding him in 20s, 18s, 16-team leagues, I think even 14-team leagues. I think he's going to be able to stick at a 25-minute-per-night role. Now, again, TJ Warren was out in this game, but he's just going to take Ryan Anderson's minutes because Anderson's terrible. Bridges is taking Jackson's minutes, playing the 2 and the 3. And I think he'll stick at this mid-20s in minutes. He won't shoot this well, but he generates steals. He generates blocks. I had him, I think, 10th or 11th in my dynasty rookie rankings. He can just contribute in many categories. And in 2 or 3 years' time, when he gets that ability to up his usage, I think his probably overall upside is a better Otto Porter. I think a more aggressive and accumulating defensive stats Otto Porter. Maybe he can't be quite as efficient as Otto, but through his time at Villanova, he was a great three-point shooter. So that's the sort of player I think upside-wise Mikal Bridges can become if everything comes together. It won't be this season, but looking forward to the future. But for now, while he's not a 12-team league guy to go and add, he is a guy to pay attention to in anything deeper than that. I just see now that the Booker, Ayton, Bridges lineup today played 13 minutes together, and they were a plus 28.5 net rating, and the 4 highest 3-man lineup combinations all included Mikal Bridges as well. So he contributes to winning basketball, and he can be a fantasy asset by putting up threes, steals, and blocks. And if the usage comes together and the efficiency's there, then it is the makings of a really, really handy fantasy type of player. So Mikal Bridges showed again that he is ahead of Josh Jackson in that rotation, and he is going to be a every night part of things here. And if at some point in January he pushed to 30 minutes a night, I wouldn't be stunned as they go Bridges, Ariza, Warren as the main minutes guys at the 2-3-4 with Booker playing a lot of point guard. I could see that being something that could very well work for this Phoenix Suns team.
Young Gun of the Night.
The Young Gun of the Night goes to his teammate DeAndre Ayton, who had a pretty weird stat line when you look at it, to be honest. He took only 4 shots and had 4 free throws for 9 points. But contributions right across the board. 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks. Weird that he's only getting that many field goal attempts in this one. Only 11 per game across the season. That can stand to go up, especially considering he's at 63%. The Suns' offense still needs to work on getting him the ball more. But averaging 16 and 11, almost a block a game. I think the biggest surprise from him is the 3.4 assists. We didn't really see that too much in Arizona. But a lot of the other things we're seeing, high efficiency finishing, high free throw percentage, and low blocks at 0.9 per game. These are the things that I think, you know, I always said I thought he was going to be the number one rookie this season, but in terms of overall, you know, being held back upside-wise, maybe it's because he's just not going to get the same level of blocks as some of these other guys, and that has played out so far. He also hasn't taken any threes, and I think he will be able to do that at some point as well. Yeah, he's a strong top 50 player for this season. Could very well push into the top 30. Currently, as I said, 33rd at the moment on the year. So DeAndre Ayton is your young gun of the night. I tell a man's not hot. The dud of the night goes to Nemanja Bjelica of the Sacramento Kings. As I've mentioned a few times on this show, when the Kings are getting blown out, Bjelica is bad, and his minutes get reduced accordingly. 21 minutes here in an absolute ass-kicking by the Milwaukee Bucks. 4 points and four rebounds. No peripheral stats. 2 of 8 from the field. Now, Bjelica has been an absolute sensation this season. The 41st ranked player in only 27 minutes per night, averaging 14 and 6 with 3 assists. But there's been a couple of these real turds in amongst what he's done, especially at game 2 against the Pelicans, where he had 4 points in 11 minutes. But all these other games, because the Kings have been competitive in nearly all of them, the minutes have been fine. The four losses that the Kings have had, 27 minutes against the Jazz on opening night, which was a close game. Then against the Pelicans, 11 minutes. Then against the Nuggets, 21 minutes. And then today against the Bucks, only 21 minutes. So when he goes poorly, the minutes go down and the Kings lose. You'd have to think that at some point some of this Kings' hot form may fall off, and that might limit what Bjelica can do. And if that continues for a prolonged stretch of time, maybe Bagley gets more minutes, but I don't really trust Dave Yeager to necessarily do that. So Bjelica remains a strong hold, but imagining him as a top 50 player, I don't think that's going to stick. 54% three-point shooting, 58% two-point shooting numbers, which are definitely going to drop. You can expect 12, 13 percentage point drops on his threes, 8 to 9% drop on his two-pointers, and that's going to drop his value considerably. Not only does it hurt his field goal percentage, but of course, it drops down his overall scoring numbers too. So your dud of the night is Nemanja Bjelica. The plus-minus goats from Sunday, Myers Leonard was a plus 91.2, while CJ Miles for the Raptors, pretty hard to be a negative 90.6, but he was in the game when the Lakers did cut that lead down, and that impacted his net rating. Leonard barely playing this season, but had a weird double-double in a game that, there was just so many absolute ass-kickings on Sunday. A lot of the performances, they don't really tell us huge amounts, and I don't think either those that CJ Miles or Myers Leonard performance tells us much at all. Is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? If you are, your company could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on the podcast they listen to. Our demographic is 98% males, more educated, higher earning than traditional media audience. So to get your company to sponsor this podcast, email me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Let's talk some injuries now across the weekend. Otto Porter missed today's game with a toe injury. It doesn't appear to be a serious issue, but perhaps that's been something that's been impacting his poor form and his poor shooting. It's something to pay attention to. Rudy Gay missed today with a heel issue. Again, it doesn't appear to be a serious injury. Davis Bertans started in Gay's stead and didn't really do a huge amount. Very little to sort of see in terms of long-term prognosis. Well, John Isaac, man, that ankle again for Johnny Isaac. A lot of people are ready to cut bait on him, and in most cases, I think you can do it. I still believe in him as a top 100 player. Of course, it's not really going to plan at the moment with foul trouble, with injuries limiting him. This is not considered a serious injury. He probably does miss Monday's game, is all likelihood for Isaac, but then back after that, he is the 183rd ranked player for the season, still providing decent defensive numbers, but everything else not quite there. So if you do want to move on, it's not the end of the world. Kevin Knox is due back during this week after his ankle sprain. That's probably going to reduce the minutes of, say, Damo Dotson, perhaps Noah Vonleh, and probably Lance Thomas moves out of the rotation as well. Tyson Chandler bought out by the Suns, going to the Lakers. Of course, the Lakers humiliated today by the Raptors. Tyson Chandler is not going to be a fantasy valuable player. He'll probably take those 10 minutes that Jonathan Williams is playing, maybe go to 14 or 15. He's just not that good anymore, so don't be thinking that he's going to be eating into everything that JaVale McGee is doing. Chandler is not as good of a player as what McGee is at this point, and he's just not going to be too much of a fantasy asset. While he will help that backup role for the Lakers, their problems run a lot deeper than adding Tyson Chandler to the mix. I touched on it already. TJ Warren missed today's game with a back injury. He was the starting power forward. He should remain the starting power forward when he returns from these back spasms that he suffered in practice on Saturday. So I don't think we've got too much to be worried about long term there with Tej. And then on to some other injuries. Timmy Hardaway had a back injury today against the Washington Wizards. Went to the locker room twice, wasn't able to return. Again, it doesn't appear like too serious an issue, but the Knicks do play again on Monday, so there is a chance he misses, and then you'd look to stream in someone like Alonzo Trier into that spot, and Mario Hezonja stepped up in today's game too. Source Castillo, Nick Stauskas suffered a quad issue. He was not able to return against the Wolves, but they're also up about 30 points. If he is out, Seth Curry and perhaps Gaz Trent, who filled in for Stauskas today, could be deep league options. And I haven't mentioned it here, but Don Mitchell sprained his ankle and he will miss Monday's game as well. We'll look to Grayson Allen. We look to Royce O'Neal, Dante Exum to take that lead. The injury is not considered serious. He did re-enter the game after spraining his ankle and finished it out. Did he? Now I'm confusing myself. Yeah, I think he finished the game out after that ankle injury. Doesn't appear too serious, but he will miss Monday's action due to that ankle problem. All right, let's get into these games now. The first one of the day, an early one, the Kings lost to the Bucks. Like so many of these games, absolute blowout, so very little to really take out of it. Another solid performance from Troy Williams in 16 minutes, but with Bogdan Bogdanovic's return on the horizon, he, Iman Shumpert, and Justin Jackson are likely to lose some playing time. Williams probably out of the rotation entirely, and perhaps Jackson is as well. As for Jackson, he does this. 22 points on 75% shooting, does nothing else. He had 0 rebounds and 1 assist, no other stats. And then when he goes back to shooting poorly, he offers you jack shit. So not really anywhere close to a standard league guy. Not a solid player. Again, Buddy Hield and Darren Fox were fantastic, 19 and 15 points respectively, 6 assists for Diaz as well, but they didn't need to play very big minutes in this game. Well, it was just a blowout, so they just weren't in the action. 19 minutes for Will Cauley-Stein. He got into foul trouble there. Well, Marvin Bagley, this is the lines that I expected from Bagley. 11 and 6 on poor shooting. 3 of 10 from the field, 4 of 9 from the line. No peripherals, really. One block there was okay. Look, he's okay as a 12-team league guy, but is his upside high enough to justify holding him in every situation? You probably think so, but he's 142nd on the season, averaging 13 and 7, which they look nice, those numbers. They're not great. And then nothing else looks really all that good. I think his two-point percentage could fall. He's at 53% there, shooting 53% overall in the season, and that's buoyed by the 50% three-point shooting, so that's going to come down as well. And that probably pushes his value almost outside the top 150. So I'm not sure about Bagley as a must-roster 12-team league guy on the year. It could happen at some point, but if you're continually holding and holding and holding, you might miss out on some other guys who are more valuable. Onto the Bucks, Yanni had 26, 15, and 11 with a triple one. He went to the line a lot, 12 times, but only hit 8 of them. Nine of them. So that is an issue with his free throw percentage. It is affecting his overall fantasy value. But if you're punting free throws, then of course it does jump up. We knew that he had free throw issues heading into the season, and we're seeing that now. He is the 10th ranked player overall on the season, and that would be significantly higher if we were punting that free throw percentage category. Eric Bledsoe, only 22 minutes, but 17 and 6, so the people that have him, they should feel a little bit relieved there, while Brooke Lopez chimed in with 4 blocks, but again, just an ass-kicking of a game, really hard to generate too much interest in delving into those box scores all that much. The next game we look at, the New York Knicks and the Washington Wizards. I talked about Hezonja. I was pumped for him heading into this season, but Fizdale really limited his minutes. 10 and 8 in 25 here with 3 assists and 3 steals. This is what he was doing as a member of the Magic last season and what I thought he could do plus more for the Knicks this season. But with Kevin Knox returning the fort, will Hezonja have anywhere near this level of opportunity? So I'm not jumping on him yet. I'm just watching it. 26 minutes for Mitchell Robinson, 10 and 6 with a block, 4 of 4 from the free throw line. Not a good free throw shooter, so that's a bit fluky, but 26 minutes, getting you a block, that's solid enough production. I do think that he is a 12-team league guy. Well, Enes Kanter in his bench role, as Enes Kanter aligned as you can have, 18 and 12 in 24 minutes with 0 happening. I still think that you do need to hold him for 12s. Frank Ntilikina had a foul-induced 23-minute night, 6 points with 4 assists. That enabled Trey Burke and Manny Moutier to bump their minutes up. Nothing they did there would make me think that they're in line for 30 minutes a night or even pushing close to 12, 14, or maybe even 16-team league value. Timmy Hardaway struggled. The shot wasn't there. The back injury really bothered him pretty clearly. Well, Damo Dotson had 11 and 6 in 31 minutes. He's been pretty solid so far this season, but I do think Kevin Knox returning is going to put a real significant dent into what Dotson can do. On to the Wizards, they get the victory. Dwight Howard, 10-10 in 31 minutes. Still can't hit his free throws, but the 31 minutes is nice in his second game back. A nice double-double. Wall and Beal were strong. 26 with 5 steals for Johnny, while Beal had 21, 8, and 3 with a weird, weird 4 blocks. Don't expect that too often. And Markeith had 16 and 6, 5 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. A strong 12-team league guy with limited upside. Kelly Oubre got the start with Otto Porter out, 9 points in 24 minutes. I just don't believe this guy is all that good. You've heard me talk about it plenty of times. I wouldn't be having him as a must-roster 12-team league guy, not even really close to that, to be honest. He can score at times, and he has had a decent stretch of games this year, but still, he is only the 126th ranked guy for the season, and that's coming, you know, based on your 14 points in that time, which is fine. It's more of a 14-team league guy than a 12-team league guy. Not really sure if I expect him to push much further up than that. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Philadelphia 76ers and the Brooklyn Nets. Just an absolute ass-kicking in this. Now, someone on Twitter told me to mention the field goal attempt discrepancy. It is staggering. 65 field goal attempts for the Sixers, 105 for the Brooklyn Nets. That's a difference of 40 field goal attempts. Now, because the Sixers went to the line 41 times as opposed to the Nets 18 times, it does account for some of that discrepancy. But it's also the fact that the Nets won by 25 points here, 97 to 122. Embiid, you know, 16 and 15 is pretty nice. 8 of 10 from the line, far from his best game. While Simmons had 20 and 12 with 4 steals. And Dario Saric finally got the shot to fall. 14 points, but still, only 25 minutes for Dario, no assists, no steals, no blocks. So when the shot actually falls, he still doesn't have a useful line, and he is outside the top 200 this season. I don't see him as a top 100 player this season. Therefore, if there's a guy out there that you want to stream in, depending on who the guy is, like if you're streaming in Shelvin Mack, then I would say you probably want to hold Saric just for that extra long-term value. But I don't think that Saric is a must-roster guy in 10-team leagues, and he's probably not there for 12-team leagues either. Markel had 9 and 4 in 26 minutes, and I'm sure we've moved on from him in all 12-team formats, while Landry Shamet had 12 points in 28 minutes with old baby neck. Wilson Chandler resting. Shamet has been strong to start the season, a deep league three-point streamer, but could very well lose his spot in the rotation. He's clearly ahead of Timothy John McConnell, who is out of the rotation now, but that doesn't mean that Shamet is going to remain in there. Mike Muscala played 28 minutes as well and didn't trouble the scorers. 0 points with 3 assists for the Moose. On to the Nets. Nice one from Jarrett Allen, 15 and 10 with 2 blocks, while LeVert continues his most improved season candidacy campaign, however you want to say it. 20 points, 5 rebounds, 4 steals for LeVert. You know I was big on him, but I didn't see this level of offensive explosion coming. And it goes back to that thing that I talk about when you hear a huge amount of people in an organization say the same thing about one guy. It bears mentioning. We heard it significantly for Josh Richardson. Everyone saying, we're going to up his offense. He's going to average this amount of points. He's going to be the focal point, and it's happening. We heard it from Caris LeVert. Every single Nets person, man, Caris, he's on fire. He is going to be breaking out this season, and it's happening. Now, it's never going to have 100% success rate, but that sort of thing is definitely worth mentioning. Like a throwaway one-off comment, oh, best shape of his life is bullshit. But when organizational members, coaches, general managers, and every teammate says the exact same thing, I think that is worth paying attention to. And we've seen that with LeVert and Richardson this season. Jumpin' Joe Harris is clearly ahead of Alan Crabb, the blue swimmer, who is massively struggling. Crabb is a 12 and 14 team league cut guy. Harris is on the sort of borderline for those leagues. He 11 points with 3 threes here is solid enough, but I would say that he is going to hold down this starting job alongside Caris LeVert, even when Damari Carroll returns. He's a top 100 player this season. Now, the efficiency is going to fall because he's hitting 60% of his threes and 56% of his shots overall, which is giving him 3 threes a game and 14 points. That's going to dip, and he doesn't do much in those other areas. So he falls to being a fringe 12-team league guy when this efficiency does drop, which it of course will. D'Angelo Russell, 21 with 6 assists, is strong, while Rondé Hollis-Jefferson has struggled this season, no doubt. But 21 points on 64% shooting is all obviously fantastic. 6 rebounds and 3 assists. No defensive numbers, and those shooting numbers won't stick. But if he's not hot, will he actually get the 30 minutes? That's the concern here with the way that Kenny Atkinson is running this rotation, is will he get that level of playing time? You probably want to grab him if he is available, but I'm not sure his upside is significantly high for this coming season. Let's go on to the next one, the Orlando Magic and the Spurs. Huge win for the Magic on the road. Aaron Gordon had been disappointing, but he bounced back 26-8 with four triples in a big 41-minute performance for Azar. The last couple of games from Gordon had been pretty poor, and he is barely inside the top 100 this season, but he will improve from here. He's hitting 33% of his threes, which is a significant improvement on what he'd done previously, although, sorry, to be fair, 34 last year, which was fueled by a 40% streak to begin the season. So he has shown some improvements, but I just don't think he's ever going to be this top 30, top 40 guy that some people expect. I just don't really see it with him. Big game from DJ Augustine, 18, 5, and 7, 33 minutes. It's not reliable. The shooting's not reliable. The playing time's not reliable. He is a back-end 12-team league guy. There'll be nights where Jaren Grant steps up. There'll be nights where John Simmons steps up as well. So I'm not looking at Augustine as a reliable option here. While Terry Ross had 17 points in 31 minutes with John Isaac out. It was Wesawundu who started, but it was Ross who got the bulk of those minutes. He is a 3-point points and steals type streamer. That's really about it. Vooch had 13-8, and Mobamba, a nice double-double in just 16 minutes. A solid performance from Bamba in only those 16 minutes. Still just more of a fringe 12-team league guy than a must-roster player. On to the Spurs. Bryn Forbes, I don't think you need to be having him in 12-team leagues. 13 points, he does literally nothing else in any other category. That's all he does. He gives you about 13 points a game and one or two threes, and that's it. Not worthy in most 12-team formats. Dante Cunningham started, but it was Jakob Poeltl who started the second half. Nothing to get excited about with either of those guys. DeRozan had 25, 7, and 5, and Mills had 16, 3, and 3. A couple of strong Patty Mills games in a row, but I'd leave him more for the 14-team formats. I mentioned earlier Rudy Gay was out, so Davis Bertans started. He had 8 and 5 in 26 minutes. A rotation guy for sure, Bertans, but not a guy that's really going to be troubling the scorers all that much outside of 16 or 18 team leagues. Very little value there for Bertans. The next game we look at is the Memphis Grizzlies and the Phoenix Suns. The Suns win at 102-100 on a Devin Booker game winner. No Jermichael Green, obviously, for the Grizzlies, so Jaren Jackson Jr. started. Cannot stay out of foul trouble, really. 23 minutes for Jackson, 4-3. I am still holding him in every league that I've got him. He hasn't really been able to get to 30 minutes in any of the last four games due to foul problem, and that's obviously a concern with his numbers, but I will still hold him. Marcus Gasol, just a disaster field goal percentage-wise, 15% from the field for 7 points, while Kyle Anderson showing some signs of life. 10-5 in 27 minutes with a block. I wouldn't say I'm rushing to grab him off the wire, but I would absolutely consider looking if he's there. Does it fit what I do? Because he's starting to look a bit more comfortable. Dylan Brooks had 17 points on 70% shooting. Won't continue. His minutes are all over the place, as are Wayne Seldon's and Marshawn Brooks, while Mike Conley also struggled in the field goal percentage, 19% on 16 attempts. Those two guys, if you had them both on your team, you probably, if you're winning field goal percentage for this week in a head-to-head matchup, you probably lost it. For the Suns, Trevor Ariza, 16, 9, and 5, two steals and two threes. A nice performance from Ariza without TJ Warren around. He's been up and down, mainly down this season, but a couple of strong recent performances have got him pushing back towards the top 100. He's not there yet, but it's mainly because he's shooting 36% from the field. That is bound to come up, but I can also see him getting bought out or replaced by McCall Bridges in that starting lineup if they don't want to go to the full-time Devin Booker at point guard situation. So I think that could happen at some point. Booker had 25 with 7 assists, very empty otherwise, while Isaiah Kanan, 31 minutes, Ali Okobo, 14 minutes. That ends the Ali Okobo standard league situation. I thought he could hold on to that job. I thought he should have held on to that job. But since Kanan's returned, he's actually playing more minutes than he did before the injury. So 13 points for Kanan there, a 3-point streamer, a deeper league guy. While Ryan Anderson started, played 28 minutes and had 5 points, your league would have to be extraordinarily deep to consider him. And what was the point of signing Jamal Crawford on this team? The answer is zero. There is no reason he should have been signed. He's playing 6 minutes a night. He's bad. He's the worst rotation player in the NBA, in my opinion. Great bloke. One of the best blokes in the league. James Jones clearly wanted to bring him in because he is a great bloke, but offering nothing to this team whatsoever. And I'm glad that they're not playing him 20 minutes a night to stunt the development of Bridges. Speaking of Josh Jackson, which I did before, trash. 6 points in 13 minutes. Not writing him off, but man, I couldn't get any closer to writing off a second-year player than I am with Josh Jackson. I just don't ever think he's going to figure it out. He just doesn't seem to get what he's supposed to do. I give him 3 years. It's only your second year, but man, it is so bloody close. I am so ready to do it, but I've got to stick to my guns with just holding off on completely crucifying blokes in their at the start of their second season. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Portland Trailblazers. No Derrick Rose, who that ankle injury bothering him, Jeff Teague with his knee, and Jimmy Butler had a real case of the shit blokes sitting this one out because of just precautionary rest. He is just an absolute knob of the highest order, and they just need to get him out of there. This team is a shit show. This organization is a shit show. I feel sorry for the fans. Butler's screwing them over. Tom Thibodeau's got no idea what he's doing. Glenn Taylor needs to harden up and do something about this scenario because it is not good. Butler's sitting on the bench waving a towel with Warriors supporters. Karl Anthony Towns clearly is affected by Butler and his bullshit shenanigans there. There is no need for him to still be on the team. Just get his ass out of here. It's ridiculous. The resting is a pain in the ass for us fantasy-wise as well, but it's a complete disaster what's going on with this team. Josh Okogie, 30 minutes, 6 points, 3 rebounds. As I've said plenty of times, that's fine. When Butler sits out, you stream Okogie in. But he is not a high upside type of a guy for this season, I believe. And someone's going to come back in a Butler deal, which means he's probably not going to be a rotation player. Wigo had 17 points and 3 steals. Townsie had 23 and 5, but just an absolute blowout again. While Taj Gibson, he can't even get to 25 minutes anymore. Again, some of that's blowout related. Shout out to Jared Terrell, who played 21 minutes, and Kata Bates-Diop, who both scored their first NBA points in today's game, while Tyus Jones struggled. 4 points in 27 minutes as this shit show continued. Onto the Blazers, Myers Leonard had a 15 and 12 double-double in 22 minutes. No Mo Harkless, so he stepped in with Caleb Swanigan struggling. Very little to see with either Leonard or Swanigan. While Zach Collins, I think the bubble's bursting. We're coming back to what I sort of expect now. I love Collins. I have been one of his biggest supporters until everyone jumped on board this season with him. 18 minutes, 11 points. The thing is that the high block numbers, the insane field goal percentage in the perfect nights, the 6 block nights, they were never going to continue. And we'd need him to get a 24 or 25 minute role consistently, which isn't going to happen every night for him to remain a 12-team focal point. So while his value looks really strong at the moment, remember, it is fueled by a couple of really weird performances to begin the season. Yusuf Nurkic is playing well. And if Nurkic plays well, then Collins just isn't going to get the playing time. He was, I think this time last week, the 41st ranked player. He's 95th. At the moment, averaging 11 and 4, and unless you think that there is going to be a switch made to the starting center this season, I don't. I think it's going to happen next season. Then I think it is going to be pretty tough to hold on to Collins. And the block numbers are still fine, but only 2 over the last 3 games. He's not rebounding very well, 4 rebounds over the last 3 games. And that shooting, which was fueling his first 4 games, 75, 80, 33, and 100% from the field, that really boosted him right up those rankings to begin the season. And it is starting to come down, and come down in terms of normalizing. Nurkic was great, 19 and 12 in 23 minutes. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yep, he was shit. 6-6 in 23 minutes. Not a 12-team league player either. While Lillard and McCollum, they just did enough to destroy the injured Minnesota Timberwolves. The last game of the night was the Raptors and the Lakers. Serge Ibaka, absolutely insane performance from Serge. He was 34-10 with 2 steals, 15 of 17 from the field. He is hitting his shots at a crazy rate. His field goal percentage splits are insane. 65% on his twos, 21% on his threes. Both of those numbers are going to normalize. He is a top 50 player on the season, despite not getting the block numbers back up to his prime, because he's averaging 18 points in 28 minutes on 57% shooting. But there, I feel like there is going to be a pretty significant drop down. Now, he is playing center, so he is getting easier shots. So I think he's going to finish higher than the 48, 48, 48, 48, which has been his field goal percentage for the last 4 seasons. I think he's going to finish higher than that, but will he stick at 57%? Probably not. And that's going to dip him back down to the 70s or 80s in terms of production, because this level we're getting at the moment from Ibaka is just not able to continue. But he's being put in the right positions to succeed, and that's leading to some pretty good results for Serge. Pascal Siakam, another guy who I get tons of questions about, 16 and 13 in 35 minutes. There is no one denying that when he gets 30 minutes, he is useful. But we have to remember, someone was out today.
I'm a fun guy.
So with Kawhi Leonard out, the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
he played almost exclusively at the three, giving more of those minutes to Siakam. And we saw the game before when Siakam and Anunoby and Leonard are all playing that Pascal goes down to 25 or 26 minutes, and that makes him a fringe guy. Now, on the nights when Kawhi is out, then Siakam's an excellent stream-in sort of a candidate. And that might actually be the case on Monday as well. We don't know if Kawhi is going to play with that foot issue. But overall, you know, we love what Siakam can do, but 35 minutes a night is not a realistic expectation for him. So just, you know, be aware that if you are adding him, watch who you're dropping. The numbers for him are strong, but again, high shooting, 68% on his twos. He's at 60% overall, 11 and 7 in 27 minutes. Bring that down to a more realistic, say 60% on twos, which is where he was last season. And then we're down to maybe 9 points per game with 7 rebounds in 27 minutes and half a block, which isn't, and poor free throws. It's just not going to be enough to keep him inside the top 100. I've got him projected at 26 minutes a night for the rest of the season, but at 54% from the field instead of 60%, he drops down to being a guy outside the top 120, which I think is a more realistic expectation on what Pascal Siakam can do for you in your fantasy league. Onto the Lakers, Lonzo Ball, 12-9-4, 2 steals and 2 threes. He outplayed Rajon Rondo in this game. He was a big part of the comeback. Those guys seem to be going back and forward in terms of production. Well, they just need to stick with Lonzo because he's a better player. There'll be nights when he does struggle, of course, but I think the constant chopping and changing is not great for him. Josh the Hitman Hart had 3 steals in 30 minutes. Again, a lot of his minutes came in that second half comeback when they were down. I don't believe he's a 12-team league guy. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, had a very Kuzma line. 24 points on only 16 shots, but no steals, no blocks, only the 5 boards. Still a 12-team league guy, but let's wait and see how that goes. A weirdly poor night from LeBron, 18-2-6. He sat out as the Lakers came back with their young guys down the stretch, while KCP and Lance Stevenson provided a whole bunch of nothing. And JaVale, only the 17 minutes for McGee. Again, one of those guys that they did sit out and ran with the young guys at the end, with Zubats holding those center minutes. Zubats has been okay the last couple of games, but I do think that they will go with Tyson Chandler there, and it's not going to make too much of an impact fantasy-wise either way. All right, let's look at the week ahead now for fantasy basketball purposes. In terms of looking at which team has the best schedule for fantasy, it is the Atlanta Hawks, who do have a 4-game week. They've got a matchup against the Hornets and then the Knicks, as well as the Pistons, and finish the week against the Lakers. So some high-paced teams, some poor defense teams there as well, should all help the Atlanta Hawks. That boosts guys like The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, Alex Len, DeAndre Bembry. Maybe even you could consider Jeremy Lin in, say, a 14-team league, whose minutes have pushed up. It also, you know, really bumps the value of the artist formerly known as Torian Prince and Trae Young for the week ahead. The team with the worst schedule, the San Antonio Spurs, the only team with 2 games, and they play the Heat and the Rockets. Really hard to even lock any of these guys into a weekly lineup, including DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge. I think that outside, you know, they'll both be outside the top 100 for this coming week in those 2 games. So pretty hard to roster those guys or lock them into weekly lineups unless you're, say, in a 14-team league or something deeper than that. There are 11 teams this week with 4 games. The Hornets have one of the pick of the bunch in terms of the 3 games. Let's go through the 4-game teams. We've got the Hawks, the Thunder, the Nuggets, the Pistons, Pacers, Knicks, Magic, Celtics, Bucks, Rockets, and Heat. They all have four games this week, with 3 of them having 3 quality games. The Hawks, the Celtics, and the Bucks. And then of the teams with 3 games, the Hornets are worth mentioning, as are the Blazers. They play 3 games, but all 3 of their games are on low-volume days, so you have the potential of being able to stream them in. Now, the way the week's games go, we've got 9 on Monday, 4 on Tuesday, so that's a quality day, 10 on Wednesday, 4 on Thursday, another quality day, 7 on Friday, another quality day, 10 on Saturday, and 6 on Sunday, another quality day. So we've got 4 quality days for the week, for this upcoming week for fantasy basketball. The pseudo back-to-backs and back-to-backs on Tuesday, Thursday, you can stream Bucks, Suns, and Trailblazers players. McCall Bridges, maybe it's Patty Connaughton or Tone Snell for the Bucks. Probably not. Ersan Ilyasova, a better option, would have been a better example. For the Blazers, maybe it's Jakey Lehman, maybe it's the Chief Al-Farouq Aminu that you can stream in. Thursday, Friday, there's only the one team with a back-to-back there, and that is the Celtics. They take on the Suns and the Jazz. So guys like Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris, maybe Aaron Baines, maybe Marcus Smart. You could have a look at streaming on that back-to-back. And then there's a slew of teams who have the Friday, Sunday. Atlanta, Denver, Detroit, Indiana, Orlando, Boston, and Charlotte. The Boston one's interesting. You can add a Celtics guy for Thursday and get three games over four nights for your one waiver acquisition. So guys like Morris, like Rozier really do come into consideration in the middle of the week with a strong end to the schedule for those guys. Other players to watch for this week, we've got DeAndre Bembry as a guy who does push up given the Hawks' strong schedule. Dennis Schroeder gains value and can be a weekly lock guy. Ish Smith, a bunch of Knicks guys, Frankie Ntilikina, Noah Vonleh, assuming he can stay out of foul trouble, and Mitch Robinson. They've got a strong four-game week. Terry Rozier, Kelly Olynyk, and Terry Ross also are some guys on your waiver wire who might actually be useful enough in a weekly lock 12-team league that you could bring them in and actually roster them, plus streaming, as I mentioned, on those days that we talked about before. Let's look at DFS now. The perfect lineup on DraftKings: Johnny Wall, 48.5, Brad Beal, 43.5, Azza Gordon, 39.5, and Ibaka had 55. Myers Leonard, out of the blue, 36.5. Lowry had 59.5. Ariza, 37.75. And Siakam, 39.25, for a total of 359.5 on DraftKings. And that cost $49,300. On FanDuel, Shelvin Mack, 38.2. Kyle Lowry, 58.7. DeRozan, 42.9. Evan Fournier, 33.7. Ariza, 36.3. Wigo had 27.7. Ibaka, 54. Siakam, 37.1. And Yusuf Nurkic, 36.4, for a total of 365. And that cost $59,800 dues. Let's go into these games now for Monday, nine of them. On FanDuel, we're going to be focusing mainly on the prices, the Rockets versus the Indiana Pacers. I think there are some significant options here for the Rockets to use. Injury-wise, we've got Eric Gordon out with a leg injury. Nothing of real note for the Indiana Pacers. If we're looking at point guards, I like Chris Paul quite a bit here for the Rockets. He's in a solid spot with a really good price, which is always a key thing to look at. Where is it? I'm trying to find his price. And there he is. He is at 8,400, Chris Paul. He is averaging 47 over the last three. He struggled a little bit in the game with Jim Harden back, just the 33. But 8,400, I do think that he is a pretty strong option to look at here in this one. The Pacers point guards, you've got Corey Joseph, you've got Daz Collison. Not really interested in either of those guys. They do tend to eat into each other's playing time and production. Collison at 4,500 has a marginal level of appeal, but it's just too hard to rely upon him in cash with the way that Nate McMillan is doling out those minutes. The shooting guards, we've got Harden. Actually, am I on the wrong? I think I might be on the wrong page. Am I on FanDuel or DraftKings here? Sorry, everything's going really weird at the moment with what I'm looking at. I think we're on, we're back here on DraftKings. Harden, I think he's a good option. He comes in at 11,100, solid record against the Pacers, 56 point average over the last three. A strong FanDuel cash play. Hasn't quite been at his best this season, obviously dealing with that hamstring injury has limited what he can do. The other ones we want to look at on the Indiana side, Vic Oladipo, I think, is also in a pretty good spot, given the matchup, given the way he's been playing as well, averaging 47 over the last three at 9,100. I think that both Harden and Oladipo are cash options on this slate for the games on Monday. Let's move on now and have a look at some small forwards in this game. Mello is at 5,500. He's got a small reprieve here with Eric Gordon being out. When Gordon, Paul, and Harden are all healthy, it's pretty tough to rely on Mello. He did have 25 last game without Eric Gordon as well, so there is something there, but I'd still probably restrict him to being more of a tournament guy. While Tyreek Evans showed a flash last game, 26 points there. He is at 4,900, so it is an upside play, but again, it's trying to have faith in what Nate McMillan's going to do with that rotation, and that's pretty tough at this stage. Bojan Bogdanovic at 4,700, always just a tournament option, nothing really more than that. Jim Ennis, Gerald Green, I don't really think they're going to get it done, unfortunately. At power forward, Gary Clark, Gazza, a really interesting player at the moment. He's a clear rotation guy. He's getting significant minutes each night, 17 a night over the last three, and giving us 17 points, including 25 last game in just 21 minutes. At 3,800, if you can get a 25, 26 minute or point production, FanDuel point production, out of someone like Clark, whose roster percentage is probably pretty low, it's not a bad look in a tournament. Who is he's playing well. He can fill up the box score as well. So that's something to pay some attention to. Thaddeus Young at 6,100, I see very little upside. Maybe it's an okay floor, but even then, I don't really buy into him as an option. Well, Domantas Sabonis at 6,000, I like him as a solid cash floor play. His upside is limited, though, of course, by Miles Turner, but I think he's definitely worth a look. Here, on the Rocket side of things, Isaiah Hartenstein at 3,500. Yeah, probably not. PJ Tucker at 48. You're not really feeling too much about either of those guys there either. And then we move on to the centers. A couple of interesting names, of course, Miles Turner and Clint Capella. Capella's at 8,200. I feel like that's pretty solid as an option, averaging 39 over his last five. He's a guy that's looking at 38 to 45 type range, which is strong for cash. Miles Turner at 5,800. I'd only consider it a tournament play, but even then, I don't think it's overly strong as an option for this game. The total here is 212, which I should have mentioned before, and at the moment, the spread is even. So really close game expected. You wish the total was a bit higher, but the Pacers are one of the slower teams so far in the NBA, and the Rockets aren't rolling at a super high pace either. The next game we look at, the Cavs and the Magic. The Magic are favored by 3 points. The total is 212 as well. The Cavs are an absolute disaster. Joe Vardon, go check out The Athletic. Read that piece about the veterans not thinking that Colin Sexton is any good and becoming disillusioned with him. The fact that J.R. Smith is requesting trades, he's out of the rotation, then he's playing minutes above other guys. Just a complete shit show. Larry Drew is not acquitting himself very well. The front office looks disgusting. The players look terrible. The Magic coming off a huge win against the Spurs. It is a back-to-back for them, but it is interesting to see if they're going to be able to do anything here in a real, not must-win, but a should-win situation for the Magic up against this dysfunctional Cleveland team. DJ Augustin at 4,500, a strong game from Deej today. I think that's tournament worthy, especially against this Cavs team, it's got real disaster potential written all over it. Colin Sexton at 4,700 has just not been good. He's always worth looking at as a GPP type of a guy, but he's not good. He doesn't contribute in many categories at all, and that does limit overall fantasy upside. Well, George Hill is just not really getting it done, and Jerrant Grant, I don't think we need to be overly interested in. For the shooting guards, Evan Fournier at 6,000. That's a solid enough floor, but even today he played pretty well. Still only had 34 points, so I'm not leaning into that one all that heavily. Terry Ross with John Isaac likely out at 4,700. I think that's a relatively solid play, even for cash games with what he's been doing and getting those extra minutes. Rocket Rodney Hood is always tournaments, nothing more. While Jordan Clarkson at 46. I don't mind Clarko at 46. You know he's going to get his shots. He's going to get you 24, 25 FanDuel points, which is okay without being spectacular. So not a bad cash floor there for Jordy Clarkson. At the small forward position, Chetty Osmond's at 6,100. Not ready to go in there for cash, but I think that he's a worthy GPP guy, while Sammy Decker at 4,200. He is starting, but is he providing much? He did in one game, and then not much after that. Not really massively into Decker. I don't think the upside is all that high for him. Johnny Simmons at 4,200 has had a history of putting up big numbers against the Cavs, so bear that in mind. He averages 36 points the last three meetings against them. Of course, different Cavs team, but this one's worse. So maybe Simmons can push in with no Isaac. If his wrist is still bothering him, then perhaps he doesn't get the same amount of minutes that he would normally to have the same sort of impact that we've seen in those previous games. At power forward, as Gordon at 7,300, beat that value today, barely. So that's important to know. He had a big game, but still only put up 38 points, so 7,300. He can do a 44, he can do a 50, and this is the opportunity to do it against Cleveland. But having a reliability in him doing it is a different manner, and I'm not there. Larry Nance at 5,300. Larry Drew hates him, apparently just refuses to play him the minutes that he requires, so that would be a pretty ballsy play to throw Nance into any sort of cash-type lineup. At center, we've got Muhammad Bamba at 4,900.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
a strong 30-pointer for Bamba. Big men have put up big numbers against the Cavs this season. I'm okay with looking at Bamba here. I think he's in a strong spot. Then you've got Tristan Thompson at 4,900. Give me Bamba every day of the week there. And Vooch up to 9,000. Coming off a back-to-back is a little bit worrisome here for Vucevic. But we've seen lots of big games go up against the Cavs centers. So I think 9,000 for Vooch is okay, but there are better options. Say Nikola Jokic at 9,500, for example, is a better option, I think, than Vooch at that $9,000 price point. Now, I do remember I forgot to give you the options there over on DraftKings. My system is screwing around on me, so I'm not going to be going through and giving the DraftKings picks, but you can see them over on Basketball Monster. So apologies to you on today. My DraftKings system is not responding to me as I would have liked it for the show. The next game we look at, the Miami Heat and the Detroit Pistons. No spread or total currently for this one because we don't know if the iron shoulder Goran Dragic is going to play. He is questionable alongside Hassan Whiteside, who's dealing with a knee issue. And for the Pistons, Reggie Bullock is listed as doubtful, meaning we're probably going to get the Shark Bruce Brown starting with a boost in minutes to Langston Galloway. Now, last game with Goran Dragic injured, Justice Winslow took the starting point guard role and put up a huge performance. But if Dragic plays, does Winslow get anywhere near that opportunity? My guess is going to be no. So that could be an interesting tournament one that could screw you over if Dragic does in fact play. Now, if Whiteside is out, Olynyk and Bam would become very, very strong tournament and cash options. Let's look at the point guards in this one. I love Ish Smith at 4,500. He gets a boost playing alongside Reggie Jackson with Bullock likely out. So 4,500, I think he's pretty strong. Now, his performances, Ish, have been a bit down lately, but I do think he can be a 25 to 26 point guy, which is pretty strong at that 4,500 mark. And I also like Reggie Jackson down at 5,800 there, a 35-point performance against a Heat team that's struggling. And without Reggie Bullock, could help Reggie Jackson put up some interesting type numbers there. On the Miami side of things, Dragic at 6,500. I don't really want anything to do with it, but it's bears mentioning that 42 points per game the iron shoulder Goran Dragic has averaged over the last three against Detroit. So that could be a weird tournament guy. If Dragic is out, I like the 4,300 for Tyler Johnson as well. On to the shooting guards. The Shark, Bruce Brown, minimum salary, hasn't really done too much, but a minimum salary starter, FanDuel's worst score drop situation is worth looking at just to see if anything pops. Because he has had one 18-point game already this season, which came in only 13 minutes. So he can clearly put up the numbers occasionally, very, very occasionally, but he can do it. Dwayne Wade at 5,300. I feel like Dwayne is a cash option at 5,300. He's been pretty solid in terms of his overall production, and nothing here makes me think that he won't be able to do that. Well, Langston Galloway at minimum salary, you could also go away from Brown and throw Galloway in as a punt option if Bullock is out, as we expect at this point. Scooter Magruder at 5,500. I like his value a lot more if Dragic is out, because it takes Justice Winslow away from the 3 and the 4, giving more minutes to Magruder, who has been pretty rock solid, averaging 28 over the last 5. So he can be an option, but more so steering towards that if Dragic happens to be out. For the small forward, Stan Johnson at 46, not really having much interest there. Joshy Richardson at 7'3 is averaging 41 over the last 3. If Dragic is out, that really solidifies Joshy to me, but I still think that he's pretty strong regardless as a cash and as a tournament play in this game. Not much else really happening. Winslow at 5,500, that's a big boost to his price because he did drop 46 last game. That was as a point guard. Now, if Dragic is in, I think Winslow's a bad option. If we hear that news in advance, of course, you could throw him into a tournament and you could hope for a 40-point upside, which he could get to if Dragic is out. But if Dragic is in, I think that he'll struggle to make that 22-point mark, which is going to leave him undervalued at that $5,500 type area. For the power forwards, Blake Griffin has been putting up some pretty big numbers so far this season. And against this Heat team, I think he'll have a decent shot of being able to continue that. Where is his price? He's at 9,400. He's averaging over 50 the last 3. I think that he is a strong enough cash guy here. And then Kelly Olynyk, who'll be matching up against him, is being really poor. 12-point average over the last 3. But if Whiteside is out, I think that Olynyk does come into play, especially for tournaments. Not much else, I don't think, to really talk about at that position in this game. At center, we're talking Whiteside, we're talking Drummond. Whiteside's at 8,600. I'll fade him with that sore knee. And then we look at Bam at 3,800, which is a great use of the FanDuel drop lower score situation, especially if we don't hear news on Whiteside, because if Whiteside's out or limited during the game, Bam could very easily put up 40. So I really, really like Bam, especially as that tournament guy. As for Drummond, who's at 9,200, has had a really good record against Miami in the past, averaging 54 over the last three, some of that without Blake Griffin, so we have to pay attention there. I wouldn't be looking at him as a 50-point guy, more of a 40-point guy, so not the number one guy that I'm looking at in this game. No spread or total, as I mentioned earlier, in this game, because we don't know the status of Dragic or of Hassan Whiteside. The next game is the Chicago Bulls and the New York Knicks. Tim Hardaway is the questionable one here with that back injury he sustained against the Washington Wizards. The Knicks are favored by 3. The total is 216. A lot of bigs have killed the Bulls this season, so Enes Kanter and Mitchell Robinson have a real opportunity here to put up some pretty big numbers in this game that the Knicks would hope they can win. But if Hardaway's out, that's going to make that spread a little bit more interesting. For the point guard matchup, you've got Cameron Payne at 4,400. He's getting low 20s in minutes now with Blakeney and Archer Jackano getting some of that. So probably off Payne at that sort of a price. Well, Archer Jackano at 3,700, really not interested in him too much either. Moutier and Burke, I think we'll leave them alone. Well, Ntilikina at 5,500. He is struggling at the moment, but I like the matchup for him going up against the Bulls. Yeah, being able to put up 24 or 25, I think that he is definitely in play in that area. Zach LaVine and Justin Holiday, two shooting guards for the Chicago Bulls. LaVine comes in at 8,300. The numbers have dipped for him, no doubt, averaging under 38 over the last five, which isn't enough at 8,300. I think there are other guys you can look at, but this also could be a game for him to explode. So GPPs is probably the way I look for him, whereas Justin Holiday at 5,400, the minutes are consistent, the production's consistent. I don't mind him as a cash guy. Damo Dotson at 5,600. If Hardaway is going to be out, he should be a solid 25 to 26 point guy. So I think that he's worth looking at if Timmy actually happens to sit. And Alonzo Trier at 39 would become a great option, especially for tournaments. But if Hardaway is out, I think Trier bumps up to be a pretty strong cash guy as well. Whereas Hardaway at 7,900, I think that's probably a little bit high for a guy who was clearly hobbled by that injury today. For the small forward, Jabari Parker at 6,600, averaging a putrid 16 points per game over the last three, getting a lot of minutes. He had 40 minutes last game and put up 15 FanDuel points. Tournament only, I just can't trust him. He just seems so completely disinterested in everything he's doing. Chandler Hutchison's at 4,000. Strong performance from him last time for old Hutch. Just don't think we can really rely on that too much. While Hezonja at 3,600, that would be worth looking at. If Hardaway's out, he put up a big 32 today, Mario. So It's a Me could be that guy if Hardaway's out, which would be worth throwing into your tournament pool to see how that all pans out. For the power forwards, Noah Vonleh, he can't keep out of foul trouble at the moment, and that is limiting what he can do. It's helping some of the other Knicks guys, but it is limiting what Vonleh can do. At 5,700, not sure that he is a must roster guy, but maybe you could throw him into a tournament. That price just feels a bit high. The guy I love, though, is Wendell Carter Jr. He's up to 7,800. That's because he's averaging 47 points over the last three. I'm not sure the Knicks are necessarily going to be able to slow him down as he gets tons of shots, blocks shots. He's playing really, really well, quite clearly at the moment, one of the best rookies going around in the league at this present time. And then at the center position, you have got Mitchell Robinson at 4,900. I love the upside for Robinson in this matchup against the Bulls, whereas Kanter at 6,700, probably a little bit too high to rely upon. Robinson is the guy that I'd be looking at, and of course, Felizio and Robin Lopez aren't. The next game we take a look at, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 4.5, and the total is a monster, 238 points. Lord Alfred Payton, I believe he has been ruled out already. Yes, he has. Anthony Davis and Darius Miller are listed as probable for the Pelicans. Let's look at the point guards. Last time out, the Pelicans started Wes Johnson and moved Drew Holiday over to point guard. So that's worth bearing in mind. Russell Westbrook at 12,000. I love this for cash. This feels like it's almost a 58-point floor with, you know, 65, 70-point upside. Really, really interested in Westbrook here. Super solid as a cash option on the Pelicans side of things. You know, Timmy Frazier, Frankie Jackson, very little to look at with those guys. At shooting guard, you're looking at Drew Holiday for the Pelicans. He is at 8,600, almost a lock for 40 points. I think he is a fairly strong option, especially with Payton already ruled out. I don't think the Oklahoma City guys like Terry Ferguson, I don't think we need to be looking at them too much. Alex Abrines had a strong game the other day, but it's still very little in terms of overall fantasy appeal for Alex Abrines. He just needs to get super hot like he did in that game. The small forwards, of course, Paul George is the major guy here, 9,600. I like this opportunity for George in a super up-tempo, high pace, high totaled game, low spread. Love the cash ability here of George at 9,600. It is an expensive price, of course. And then you've got Nick Mirotic at 8,400. Really, really like him as a 40-point per game guy, which is what he's been doing almost every night. And it's not like every night the shot has been falling. He's just putting in the work and putting up some big numbers. Wes Johnson started. Yeah. Cool, that's great, not interested really in the slightest with big Wes Johnson. The power forwards, Tone Davis, 11-8, going to play. Yeah, no worries with rostering him. Strong in cash against this Oklahoma City team. And then they've got Jeremy Grant and Patrick Patterson, who are two guys that I don't think we should be falling all over ourselves to really take a look at. And then the centers. You've got Steve-O Adams, who is at 7,200, has struggled with the Pelicans before with the average of under 29 in the last three games. I'm not really feeling this one for Steve. When Julius Randle at 6,300, too high. With Davis back, his minutes gets pushed back. 24 points in 26 minutes last game. He's a 5,500 player. Not a 6,300 guy. And of course, with Adams around, it's pretty tough to rely upon Nerlens Noel. The next game, we take a squiz at the Boston Celtics and the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are favored by 2.5. The total is 205. Marcus Morris has been shooting the absolute lights out. Can that continue? That's the big question mark here. The Blue Arrow versus Kyrie Irving. Jamal Murray's at 7,300. I think that's probably a little bit too high against this Celtics defense. There are better ways to go about using that spot. In fact, the 7,700 for Kyrie is definitely a better option, even though this Nuggets defense has been strong this season. Not sure that, you know, Kyrie at 77 is not a good player. I think it's a pretty strong option there for him at that really cheap price still, who is averaging 41 points over the last three. Rozier and Smart, pretty tough to get invested in them. For the shooting guards, Jaylen Brown, he just doesn't do enough, does he? 4,900 for him. There is some tournament upside there. He's had a couple of strong games recently, so maybe in a tournament, maybe if you're just dying for this low price guy to put in for cash and hoping for 24 or 25, I still think that you can likely do better than that for Jaylen. And then you got Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
He is at 7,300. The last couple of games have been reduced production from Harris, but he is a 40-point upside type of guy. He probably should be a 30-point floor guy here against Denver, which is all pretty solid. Marcus Smart at 41, I touched on earlier, pretty hard for me to get too into him. Same with Monty Morris or Malik Beasley at basically minimum, or minimum for Malik, not quite minimum for Monty Morris. The small forwards, Torrey Craig getting a lot of those minutes for the Nuggets. That's not really interesting from a DFS perspective at all. Juancho Hernangómez has been the guy the last couple of games. 3,900 though, he's not really a 20-point guy. So I think there are better ways of using that. Gordy Haywood showed some glimpses at 5,400. He's more of a tournament guy than a cash guy. Still not feeling super comfortable in rostering him for DFS at this early stage of his comeback season. The power forwards in this game, there's a couple of options here that are worth paying attention to. Jason Tatum at 6,100. The shot hasn't been there for him, but I like his opportunity against Denver. Probably still more of a tournament guy than a cash guy, and even then, not a super strong one. Trey Lyles at 4,600. I think we can do better than that. And then you've got Marcus Morris, whose hot streak's been unbelievable. 5,400 for Marcus. His lowest score in his last five is 28 points, which is obviously really strong, averaging over 30 in the last five. Do you believe in the shooting? That is the big question. I don't. So I wouldn't be locking him in as a must roster type of guy. But his recent form would suggest that you have to consider it. While Paul Millsap is probably $600 or $700 overpriced at $6,500. Has got a really good record against Boston. A 43-point average the last three times. I think one or two of those coming. Or I think two of those coming as a member of the Atlanta Hawks. And he is a different player than what he was 2 years ago. So I'm not super interested in that team comparison. For the centers, Al Horford at 6,600. I think that's a reasonable price for Horford in a game that should be pretty close, enabling him to put up some decent numbers. And then you've got Nikola Jokic, who is at 9,500. Has played well against Horford in the past, a 40-point floor, which I think is pretty good. He dropped 42 points last game in only 29 minutes. Yeah, he has got clear 60-point upside. So I like him for cash. I like him for GPPs as well. Not really much to talk about with, say, someone like Mason Plumlee. The next game we take a look at is the Toronto Raptors and the Utah Jazz. Kawhi Leonard is questionable at this stage with that foot issue that caused him to miss today's game, so that's worth bearing in mind. If he is out, Pascal Siakam is the guy that gets the boost, even though the Jedi OG Anunoby is going to be the starter at small forward almost without any shadow of a doubt. Point guards in this one, we're looking at Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet. From the Toronto perspective, 4,900 for VanVleet. He's not really rolling just yet. DeLon Wright also not quite at that level that we have seen from him in the past. Lowry comes in at 8,300. It's just absolutely crushing it. The Jazz defense isn't the same as what it's been in the past. They do worry. They are troubled. If you hear my conversation with David Locke on Locked On NBA today, the Jazz have been worried by stretch big men. It's been impacting Rudy Gobert and their overall defense. And Serge Ibaka, if he starts at center, or it, regardless when they go to him, that can be an impact thing as well, opening things up for Lowry, who is really focused on these assists. 8,300, I think that's a pretty solid play for Kyle in this matchup against the Jazz. Now, no Don Mitchell, that boosts ravishing Rick Rubio. 6,300, there is cash value in Rubio with Mitchell already ruled out due to that ankle injury. Well, Dante Exum at 3,600 is a tournament flyer who could have a big game, but he did struggle the last time that Mitchell was out. So we'll ease off on going too heavily onto him. For the shooting guards here, of course, Mitchell is out. So Grayson Allen started the last time. He didn't do a huge amount in that start, but at minimum salary, he's a guy that you absolutely can consider throwing into FanDuel. He can get assists, he can score, he can get some steals. He's a solid enough rebounder. Yeah, a 25-point performance is far from out of the question. The minutes were big last time. He just didn't produce. So I think we could see something interesting out of Grayson there. Alec Burks at minimum salary. He's likely to return from that hand issue he's been dealing with, but I'm not really feeling him too much. Well, Dan Green at 51 is all right, but when Kawhi is out, he has tended to struggle. Not really ready to get overly invested there. If Leonard does play at 10,100, it's not a bad option, but I think there are better guys around in that expensive price range, like Nikola Jokic, who we mentioned in that game previously to this. Jingle and Joe's at 6,100. The form has dropped off a bit for Ingles. That might be just a smidge too high, in my opinion, while the Jedi at minimum salary, yeah, not really feeling all that interested in Anunoby at that sort of a price tag. Power forward Siakam I talked about already. If Kawhi is out, I think that he is a pretty good option. He is at 5,500. He's giving you 35s a night, which in those big games that he has. So at 5,500, he would be a really, really strong cash option if Kawhi happens to sit again. Derek Favors, I'm not really interested in that. Well, Serge Ibaka at 65, just crushing it. Now, he has struggled mightily with Utah in the past, so that gives me an element of pause, but he's playing completely differently this season, so maybe more tournaments than anything for Serge Ibaka at this point. The centers, it's Gobert, it's Valanciunas. JV is doing his damage in limited minutes, of course. He's at 6,100, and in the past, he has done very well against Gobert, a 40-point average in the last three. Centers don't normally do well against the Jazz. I don't think we can really rely upon using him at that level of salary, but he is a guy that's beasting when he goes up against these bench units, and I think he could give Derek Favors some significant issues. As for Gobert at 9,000, underperforming that level as well. Probably going to be better center options out there than using old Rudy. The next one we take a look at is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the LA Clippers. No spread at this point, no total. Is Butler going to rest this one on a back-to-back? Will Derrick Rose, will Jeff Teague play?
My name is Jeff.
We don't know at this point. If those guys are out, Tyus Jones gets a bump. Josh Okogie gets a bump as well. Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns also get pretty significant bumps in that sort of a situation. Jeff Teague is at 6,400, probably a little bit expensive given how much he sucked and dealing with an injury. So I'm not really interested in using him. While Derrick Rose, I'd only consider using Derrick Rose if we hear that Teague is out and Butler is out. But that $6,000 price tag on Rose is very, very far from appealing. I just think that big game that he had, which was huge, is not something that is going to be necessarily replicable. And if Butler is back, it's going to be tough to rely upon him there at all. For the Clippers side of things, Patrick Beverley, there's just so little upside with what Beverley is doing. Gildas Alexander at 41 is not really all that interesting to me as well. It's so hard to rely upon these guards for the Clippers. Rivers is really limiting what they're doing playing time wise. Shooting guard Lou Williams has had a couple of really high usage games in the last couple, and that's boosted his production, but he has not been good so far this season prior to those games. But at 5,800, coming off a 37 point game, which came in 21 minutes, that looks appealing. I will probably fade out on Lou because I just don't think 40% usage on the level of shooting that he's currently doing is a sustainable thing every night, whereas Butler at 9,500, if Butler plays against this Clipper team, I think that he is worth using in cash. We just don't know if he's going to be bothered to get his ass out there and suit up. For the small forwards, we're looking at Andrew Wiggins. Of course, he is at 6,600. Only really want to use him if Butler is out. But even then, he hasn't really been doing huge amounts to excite us. Only 28 points today in 31 minutes. Far from a must roster player, of course. And then Clippers guys, it's the Rooster. 6,900 for Gallinari.
Giggity!
I think that's worth looking at. I think that sort of price tag is fine for the Rooster. He is putting up good numbers against a team that's giving up quite a few numbers to opposition small forwards as well. So the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, is in play. At power forward, I really do like Tobias Harris, 7,700. Just rock solid floor. Great matchup for Tobias. Really interested in him. The Timberwolves guys as power forwards, not so much. Taj Gibson, Anthony Tolliver, 4,700 for Taj. He'll get an okay game today, 28 points, which is fine at that price. Has done well against the Clippers in the past, 35 points in the last three, but that comes in 37 minutes a game, which he just will not be getting in this matchup. And then for the centers, Boban Marjanovic is going to start again, one of the strongest cash plays out there, 5,400. Now, he wasn't quite there last game, 24 points with some uncharacteristic foul shooting, but I think you should feel pretty good about using Boban there in this matchup. And Towns at 9,400. If Butler's out, I'd be all about using Towns. And Towns could give Boban some real troubles, but it could also work the other way. So there is elements of risk with both those guys, but if Butler's out, I'd feel pretty good about using either of those guys in cash lineups and in tournament lineups. The last game of the day, the Memphis Grizzlies against the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are favored by 14 and the total's 220. It's a back-to-back for the Grizzlies, the third game in four nights. This could get really, really ugly. Omri Caspi is questionable with knee soreness, which kept him out of today's game or forced him to leave today's game early. I worry about using the Warriors guys just because of the real blowout risk there. So guys like Steph and KD are probably more of your tournament type guys in case the Grizzlies can keep it close, but this does not look like a great scenario. 8,000 for Mike Conley. Again, really hard to rely upon that with a potential blowout looming in this one. While Shelvin Mack at 45. Well, does the blowout actually help Shelvin? Maybe it does. He's averaging 32 points over the last three. You could do worse than put Shelvin into a lineup, and that is a wild thing to say at this point in the season. The shooting guards, Klay Thompson, put him into tournaments. That's really about it with him, given the blowout risk here where he could be limited. Garrett Temple at 4,500, I don't see much in terms of upside. Well, Dylan Brooks, I think, at 4,000 is worth throwing as a tournament guy, but that's probably about it, and even then, not overly interested. Durant, we've talked about already. Kyle Anderson at 4,500. He's played very well against the Warriors in the past. 36-point average over the last three. Seems to be getting it back on track, but I'm not ready to trust it. But it is a tournament option that I think we do have to pay attention to in this matchup. And then for the Warriors, Alphonso McKinney. He's a $3,700 guy. If this is a blowout, a 30-point game is a realistic possibility for McKinney if they play him 25 minutes because the game's 30 points out of hand by halftime. That's your tournament real, real wild card there, Alphonso McKinney. For the power forwards, you've got Draymond Green, of course. Just lump him in with all those other Warriors starters as to how they're going to go. Well, Jaren Jackson Jr. at 5,300, nothing more than a tournament guy because the foul troubles are just absolutely killing him. At this point in his career, Jonas Jerebko at 3,900, file him along with Alphonso McKinney. Maybe he is a blowout type guy that can come in and drop a 25 or 26 pointer on your head pretty quick. At center, Mark Gasol. I wouldn't worry about the Warriors guys. Coach Steve, we know what he does.
You can call me Coach Steve.
Don't Damo Jones, Jordan Bell, Kevon Looney, hard to rely upon any of them. While Gasol, again, really at risk at sitting here, but he has killed the Warriors. 46-point average over the last three. $8,600 is expensive, and it is not one that I'd want to use in cash, but it could be a weird tournament one. If he gets it rolling early, they stay in the game and he puts up numbers. But in saying that, I'm hearing myself talk out loud and say they're going to keep it close, and they're probably not. So you're not really interested in much from those guys. Let's go through the studs and the values. On DraftKings, I like Westbrook as a stud at $11,100, averaging 64 DraftKings points the last three times against the Pelicans. And my value play is Jabari Parker at 57, only for tournaments because he is terrible, but there is real upside there for him in a good matchup against the Knicks. On FanDuel, my stud is Chrissy Paul at 8,500. And my value play is Grayson Allen at minimum salary with Mitchell out. On Yahoo, my stud is Victor Oladipo at 3,500, averaging 48 Yahoo points over his last three. And my value is Nil Aquino at 11. On Moneyball, the stud is Paul at 8,600, Chris Paul. And the value is Grayson Allen at minimum salary. And on DraftStars, Jim Harden at 19,400 is my stud. And my value is, of course, minimum salary, Grayson Allen. My best bet for the day is the Pelicans and the Oklahoma City Thunder over 238 points. Guys, if you want to support me growing this sexy mustache that you can see, go to mobro.co/redrockbball and donate money for men's mental health, prostate, and testicular cancer. Go and subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Smash the thumbs up, subscribe, like, leave a comment. You know the ways to go and help this show. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Magic Johnson.